So tonight's reading comes from Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 34. So it's Luke 12, starting at verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' And so he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.' Then he said to his disciples, 'Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, nor about the body, what you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, and have neither storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? If you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothes the grass, which today is in the field, and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you should eat or what you should drink, nor have an anxious mind. For all these things the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knows that you need these things. But seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. Do not fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell what you have and give alms. Provide yourselves money bags which do not grow old, a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
A very apt title, isn't it, for the state that we're in at the moment. What are we trusting in? I think we're all asking that kind of question. And this just happens to be the parable that we are looking at this evening. What are we trusting in from Luke chapter 12 that the Garman read to us? Jesus, at the beginning of chapter 12 of Luke, is teaching a multitude of people. They gathered together and he began to teach them all sorts of different things. He was talking about the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. He was talking about God caring for us as individuals. We were thinking of that this morning. That he knows the hairs on our head. He knows the number of our days. He's talking about what it means to stand up for him, to be a witness for him in difficult situations. He's talking about some meaty things in those first 12 verses of chapter 12. And then suddenly, out of the crowd comes this question: "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Where on earth did that come from? Jesus had been talking about lots of other things, and he'd been dealing with lots of big issues. But this man had something on his mind that made him not even consider anything that Jesus had spoken. He was so wrapped up in his own situation, he was so wrapped up in the thoughts that he had, that he didn't hear a thing that Jesus said. It gives me a little bit of encouragement that even Jesus couldn't necessarily hold the attention of everybody that he was speaking to. Because the man was so wrapped up in his own life. He was so wrapped up in his own situation that he didn't take any notice. But the incredible thing that Jesus does is he doesn't just ignore that question and say, no, I'm not talking about that, I'm not dealing with that. If you ever want to experience that yourself, come to Adventurers sometime. And when you're teaching, you get all sorts of questions that you wonder where on earth they come from. But Jesus doesn't just ignore that question. He takes that question and he uses it to continue teaching the crowd. And as we know, as we've gone through these series of parables, that there is one main thing that Jesus is wanting to teach from them. And we have that in verse 15. Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." That is the main point that Jesus now is wanting to get across to the crowd. Guard yourself against greed. Why? Because life consists of more than the abundance of things that we possess. Greed is something, or covetousness, means the same basic thing, is that we want things that we don't have, or we want more of things that we already have. And it's something that each of us faces. Each of us has issues with. We always want more, don't we? We always want more of whatever it might be, more money, more responsibility, bigger house, bigger car, more food, whatever it might be, we have that thirst and that yearning to have more. And in the developed world, we have that all around us, don't we? We see it all around us. We just have to go out and we see the newest car. We see the biggest house. We see those people who seem to have everything, and we want more of it. But it's not just confined to people here in the developed world. You find it wherever you go. As you know, I was in Sierra Leone not too long ago, one of the poorest countries in the world. And yet there are people there that want more. They see other people have things that they don't have, and they want it. There is greed. There is covetousness. There is a yearning to have what we don't have. And it goes back, doesn't it, right to the very beginning. If you go back to Genesis chapter 3, you see Adam and Eve in the garden wanting more. They wanted something that they didn't have. They wanted to take of the fruit of the tree that God had said not to take from. And Satan had come to them and had tempted them to want that. And so it is in each one of our hearts. And yet we find it very difficult, don't we, to see it in ourselves. It's all very easy to see it in other people. We can see, oh, look, they're too taken up with money. All they talk about is money. All they talk about is their house and how good it is, or their garden, or whatever it is. But we find it very difficult to see that in ourselves. We think it's just providing for our needs. We think it's just looking after ourselves. And Jesus says we need to guard against that. Solomon, the richest man, said this: whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? Do you find that true in your own life? Do you find yourself always wanting more? You get a pay rise, you get a promotion, and you want to move on to the next one. You've achieved that, not satisfied, have to move on. Is that something that resonates in your own heart? Paul tells Timothy, doesn't he, that those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. The love of money is the root of all evil. That's why Jesus asks us to guard against greed, against covetousness, because the dangers are immense and the temptations are big. And therefore, we have to be very alert, very aware. We have to be on our guard against it. Because life is more than what we have. There is more to life than what we own. There is more to life than what we earn. And that's why we need to be aware that we are susceptible to be those that are greedy. But then Jesus goes on to illustrate that with this parable of the rich man. He went out and he had a harvest one day, and it was the best harvest he'd ever had. It yielded plentiful in verse 16. You see, there's nothing particularly wrong with money. Nothing in and of itself. Jesus isn't sign of saying that this man was wrong to have such a big yield, such a big harvest. And we read through the Bible, there are many, many people who are rich. And God blesses many of his people with money and with wealth. All the way through from Abraham, right the way through, you'll see people who are rich. And it's not wrong for us to have it. And it's not wrong for us to plan for the future. This man, because he had a great harvest, thought, what am I going to do with all these crops? I don't have any room for them. What am I going to do with them? And so he plans for the future. Doesn't sell it all at a knockdown price, but builds barns and stores it with all of his goods in verse 18. All looking good so far, isn't it? Everything is working out well. And so he puts in place this plan of building pulling down his current barns in verse 18 and building bigger ones. And because things have gone so well, I can take my ease, I can eat, I can drink, I can be merry. He's made it, hasn't he? He's got what he wants. He's got to that point where he's provided for himself and he can live the life of leisure. Isn't that what drives so many people in our country today? They're working all hours, giving up, making sacrifices so that they can earn enough to eat, drink, and be merry. But then in verse 20, God intervenes. And says to him, fool. No messing around there, is there? Fool. The psalmist tells us that the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And that's exactly how this man was living. He was living his life with no thought for God. He was living his life as though God didn't exist. He was just pleasing himself. He was doing what he wanted when he wanted to get what he needed. I don't know whether you noticed as Garman was reading that the parable out, how many times we get the personal pronoun. We see, I will do this. I will pull my barns down. I will store all my goods and all my crops. And I will say to my soul, this was a man who was only interested in himself. He had no thought for God. He had no thought for other people. All he was concerned about was living for the moment, living for now, living for himself. And so Jesus tells him that he is a fool, because this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? What good is it getting all of this wealth, getting everything up together, of just focusing on what you can get when your life is going to end? Who is going to benefit from it? What is the point? You see, this man's problem was not that he had money, but it was his attitude to it. And Jesus is just illustrating the fact that we need to be very wary. We need to be on our guard against greed, because that's what this man was showing. He was greedy. He wanted everything for himself. And Jesus was saying no. Life is more than what we have now. And refers directly back to the question that he was asked by the man who was so wrapped up in himself, so wrapped up in the thoughts of his inheritance, and the implication is that for how unfair it was, that he wasn't getting what he deserved. And that was so big in his mind that he could take nothing else in. And Jesus was reminding him, and he was reminding the crowd, that life is about more than money. Life is about more than your inheritance. And we need to be on our guard, and we need to be careful, and we need to watch our attitude to money and possessions. And then Jesus goes on to give the application in verse 21. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You see, that's what life is about. Life is being rich towards God. Is that true for you this evening? Are you looking for your own riches, to build up your own nest egg, to look after yourself? Or are you seeking to be rich towards God? J.C. Ryle summed it up better than I can probably sum it up. So I'm going to quote what he says up there on the screen. It's summarized. But he says this. What does it mean to be rich towards God? When can it be said of man that he is rich towards God? Never till he has a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Never till he has a name inscribed in the book of life, and is an heir of God and a joint heir with Christ. Such a man is truly rich. His treasure is incorruptible, his bank never breaks, his inheritance fades not. Man cannot deprive him of it. Death cannot snatch it out of his hands. All things are his already. Life, death, things present and things to come. And best of all, what he has now is nothing to what he will have later. That's what it means to be rich towards God. To have our home in heaven, which is eternal. To know that our names are in God's book of life, that we will have eternal life, and we will spend that life with him. That we are heirs with God. Because that is treasure that is sure. That's never going to go away. That's never going to rust. It's never going to be corrupted. It's always going to be there. As Jesus reminds us in that parable, these riches that we build up here with our possessions and with our money will only last for a while. And then they will go. But being rich towards God will last forever. Do you know something of that this evening? Do you know what it means to be rich towards God? Do you know that you have a home in heaven? Do you know that your name is written in God's book of life? Do you know that you are heirs of God? There was a pastor in America who was invited to dinner one day in the home of a very wealthy man. After they had eaten together, the host wanted to show the pastor around his estate. And he started to go out and took him up to a place where he could see all around. And the man was pointing out to him all that he had done. 25 years ago, he said, I never had anything of this. But now you can see the cattle I have over there, the herds that I have over there. You can see over this other side, the fields of grain. If you turn around and look over here, you can see the oil wells that I've been able to dig. They're all mine. And he turned to the pastor and was expecting him to say, compliment him on his success. But the pastor placed one hand on the man's shoulder. And he pointed up and he said, how much have you got in that direction? What are you trusting in this evening? Are you trusting in your own ability to look after yourself, to provide for yourself? Or are you trusting in the Lord Jesus? I can't really answer that question for you. Only you can do that. But what I can do is I can tell you what I'm doing. You know, and I'm trusting in God. I'm trusting in his love. Because he sent his son, Jesus, down from heaven to die on a cross, to take all the wrong things that I've done and to take my place and to bear the punishment of it. I'm trusting in God and in his grace. Because he didn't have to do that for me. I don't deserve any of it. But he has shown his love to me. I'm trusting in God and in his peace. Because of that forgiveness that I have, I know that I am right with God. I know that my sin is forgiven. And I know that I'm going to be with him in heaven because my name has been written in his book. And I'm trusting in God and in his power because he lives within me daily. I know his presence and his help each day in any situation that I face. And I'm trusting in God and in his hope that I will be with him forever.